This is The Coaching Inn, a podcast from 3D Coaching. Hello, welcome to The Coaching Inn podcast. I'm Claire Pedrick and I'll be your host for today. I'm a Master Certified Coach. I've been coaching for about 30 years and I'm particularly interested in ethics and mental health. Because one of the beliefs that we have is that the people that we coach are robust enough to deal with their own stuff, unless it turns out they're not. That's been a really good kind of rubric for ethics for me for many years. But the question that I'm left with is, how do I know if they're robust enough or not? So one of the things I think is really important is that coaching is safe enough for me. It's safe enough for the person who comes for coaching, and it's safe enough for the world that we inhabit. So knowing when somebody's not robust enough is a really important thing. And I've been privileged to meet a woman called Jenny Forge. Jenny is a psychiatrist and she's now an accredited coach with the ICF. And we've had a number of interesting conversations around ethics and mental health, so much so that we decided to record one and share it with you. So here we go. So Jenny, you're a coach, you've got the ACC credential with the ICF, and you're a psychiatrist. So I'm really curious, as we start this conversation, to hear from you about where the ethics of coaching fit with the ethics that you have in psychiatry.
Hi Claire, hello. Well, starting with the ethics of clinical psychiatry, I see four main areas really, which I think would apply with coaching as well and apply in all aspects of life really, which is as far as we can, don't do harm, try to do good, promote people's autonomy and be fair and just. And I think that, as I say, that fits across the board.
Try to do good. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, tricky one. I suppose maybe thinking of it in terms of suffering, try to promote a lack of suffering, which I guess is maybe on a par with doing good. But yes, all these things are often easier said than done. But I think that once we develop an awareness about what we're doing, we're more likely to follow a better path.
Yeah. So what does an awareness look like for you as a psychiatrist and a coach?
Again, I think similarities between both professions. Awareness is, or did you say what's awareness? What does awareness look like?
Yes. What does, yes, awareness of these things?
Yes. I think it's about listening to what's going on in your mind, listening to what's going on in your own body as you listen to that person and as you receive cues from the person that you're speaking to, some of which are going to be verbal, some of which are going to be non-verbal. And it's this constant readjustment and trying to remain in tune with the relationship in the moment, really. I don't know whether that fully says it. Does that make sense, Claire?
It does. So it's something about presence.
Yes.
And it's something about stance.
Yes.
And I guess it's something about our internal self-supervisor voice.
Yes. And it's an openness and a flexibility to what's happening. So it really requires a high level of attention, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes the metaphor for coaching about it being a dance.
Yes.
Being a really useful one because of all the things that we're noticing.
Yes. Yes. And I'm just reminded of an exercise that we did in one of your training courses, Claire, where we were in pairs and we mirrored the movement of the other person without any prior knowledge of what that person was going to do. And I was really clear that promoted high level of awareness and in tuneness. So that's what I'm referring to really there.
Which is a challenge if we like control.
Very much so. Very much so. And I think that in terms of some of the differences between working in mental health and working as a coach. And I certainly there, I would say that there is an overlap and there is an interchangeability, but I think you need to know where you are and be explicit about what kind of approach you're adopting.
So it's about which hat you're wearing.
Very much so. And I think that the hat that you're wearing needs to be clear to both the wearer of the hat and the person that you're with. And I think that it also probably requires, you know, when you change hats, it's both about informing the person that you're wanting to change hats and seeking permission to do so. The range of states of mind that somebody will come to see a mental health professional in is very varied. And sometimes people will feel that they're quite okay and they're robust enough for a more coaching approach, and at other times they won't feel that. And I think that there has to be something considered about a power dynamic, because I know that power isn't necessarily a very palatable word to hear there, but when a mental health professional is working with somebody who is very poorly, there is a sense that the person who is poorly is saying, please help me, tell me what to do until I feel more able to kind of think more clearly and continue on my own. That's a different dynamic to the relationship between a coach and a person being coached. But as I say, it's a complex area, because there is a merging, but I think it requires an awareness of, you know, what's happening.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that thing about power and robustness. Because one of the ways I like to think about ethics is that I believe the person I'm working with is robust enough to deal with their own stuff, unless they're not.
Yes.
And so part of this conversation is about the not, I guess, isn't it? But also the thing about power is, one of the things that I've noticed increasingly is that coaches who are good at not taking the power and at really sharing the responsibility and making it a partnership also need to pay attention when the person they're working with gives them the power.
Yes.
Because if you give me the power, I've got it, even if I didn't take it.
Yes. So again, that brings us back to the awareness, doesn't it? And I think that there's a big movement in mental health over recent years, which I think is really the way that we all have to go, which is a model called the recovery model, which much more explicitly is about working in partnership with people who are suffering with mental health difficulties. It's very much about collaborative goal setting. It's about hope. It's about agency. It's about opportunity. And those things work with a coaching approach, but there is this whole area that when somebody is really poorly in terms of their mental health, they're not in a position to think clearly. I know I'm maybe repeating myself here, but there's something about the ICF conference that we went to recently, Claire, and Dr. Laura Watkins was talking about how the mind is sometimes in protect mode and sometimes it's in explore mode. When somebody's in suffering with an acute mental health condition, they're much more likely to be in protect mode.
Okay.
And that's, you know, that's an important consideration.
So that's a useful checking thing. Mm. Am I noticing protect or am I noticing explore?
Yes. I don't know whether I quite addressed your question there, but do you want to ask me again and see if I can?
The thing about power and robustness.
Yes. And well, I think you can always ask, sorry to interrupt, but I think you can always ask somebody how robust they are feeling.
Yes.
You know, or how okay are you feeling at the moment?
Yeah.
And check in with people. And since I've become a more experienced coach, the nature of my mental health consultations has shifted a great deal. And it always, so for example, yesterday I was in clinic and it always surprises me how surprised people are when I actually ask them, you know, well, what do you want to achieve? What do you want to be different at the end of our hour together? What are the things that are most important for you in this meeting? And I think people sometimes have been conditioned to come and see doctors or mental health professionals and say, right, you know, tell me what I've got to do. Tell me what's wrong with me. Give me a prescription. I know that that's a huge generalization and a stereotype, but I think overall in health in general, not just mental health, we really need to have much more of a focus of moving away from the doctor telling the patient what they need to do and where they're going wrong, and much more about collaborative goal setting. Yeah. And I think that some of the big health problems that we have at the moment would be much better tackled in that way as a society.
Yeah, so that's interesting, isn't it? Can I just pick you up on a couple of things? You said it's great to say to somebody, how robust are you feeling at the moment? Mm-hmm. And we've talked before about the question that we need to be asking ourselves about how robust am I feeling at the moment?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. And when we're in tune with ourselves, we're more likely to be in tune with other people. We're less likely to trip up on some of those things, sort of unconscious mechanisms of putting our feelings onto other people, assuming that they're feeling in a certain way, because actually that's more how we're feeling. Yeah. If we're actually aware of how we're feeling, we're less likely to do that. Yeah. Which again comes back to the whole issue of you need good supervision and needing to, you know where you are, start where you are, know as far as you can where the other person is and start where they are.
That was very simple and straightforward, Jenny. But yeah, absolutely. The need for supervision is huge, and also the need for supervision that can give insights into those kind of blind spots.
Yes.
Is a really useful thing.
Yeah, blind spot is the word. Yeah, and we've all got them. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I might be anywhere on my scale of robustuousness, from my least robust to my most robust. Mm. And what I'm hearing you saying is we need to also be paying attention to where is the person we're working with on their scale of robustness.
Yes.
They may be at the top of their scale or at the bottom of their scale.
Yes. And I think sometimes it can be very helpful to bring that out in the open, because it will help them to think about how robust they feel. Sometimes people who have a mental health problem, or particularly who've been traumatized, they're very used to putting on a brave face, or you know that they're not, people may, and when I'm saying about people with mental health problem, I mean bearing in mind that quite a lot of the workforce, people who are employed, are suffering with a mental health problem. You know, it really isn't a them and us. There's a real same boatness and a real spectrum about, yes, mental distress. But I think that if you explicitly say to somebody, well, how are you feeling? How are you really feeling? That enables them to access themselves in a different way sometimes. You know, there are sometimes people who habitually will put on a brave face, and there are some people who habitually have a negative view that may need some, you know, help in perhaps seeing a different way.
Yeah. So how are you feeling? And we've also used the question, how robust are you feeling?
Yes.
And I'm noticing that the robust one may give a different kind of data than the how are you feeling question.
Yes. Yes. I think it's more specific. And I think it can be useful to be a bit more specific, because when particularly you're wanting to tap somebody's robustness.
Yeah. It sounds like a temperature check, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes.
on your temperature scale, what's your robust temperature, yeah, today?
Yes. And I think it is an assumption that the robustness temperature is going to fluctuate. I think we make a mistake if we feel that people become frozen in their level, in their robustness score, and it will fluctuate, you know, quite substantially sometimes during the course of a session.
Yeah.
And it would be, ideally, it would be a good thing if we could get to the end of a session and somebody would be able to feel that their robustness level was higher at that point.
Interesting. So you said earlier that mental health isn't just them, it's us, it's we, and we all have mental health. And yeah. Many people in the workforce have mental health challenges or areas that they need to be paying attention to. So yeah.
I just wanted to say, Claire, I'm not trivialising, you know, that we all have mental health. There are well-being concerns for all of us.
Absolutely.
There are some people who are really suffering acute mental illness. Stress isn't the same as severe anxiety and yes. severe depression. There is yeah. a, you know, there clearly is a distinction, but there is a spectrum of well-being and mental health. But I'm really sorry, I interrupted you again.
That's what great conversations are about, Jenny. My question was going to be, can you coach somebody who's on medication? Because I know the ICF don't say anything about that, and yet there are some professional bodies that say you can't. My personal take is, if that was the case, I probably wouldn't be coaching anybody.
Yes, I think that the certainly SSRI medication, which is the commonest medication for treating anxiety, depression, obsessionality, is prescribed to a huge proportion of the population. People who are functioning well and have often taken this medication for a long time. That in itself opens up all sorts of questions and debates as to, you know, what we're doing as a society in relation to our use of antidepressants and anti-anxiety meds. But I would certainly say that, you know, being on psychotropic medication is not a reason that somebody shouldn't be coached.
So that comes from the psychiatrist herself?
Yes. One of them, yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it, Jenny, that you can't, that a set of rules or a set of whatever it is we think we're going to do around ethics in the moment, we need to decide in the moment what's the most ethical, what's the right thing to do. So what's your insights or advice around that?
Yes. Well, I would definitely say that we'd need to take a pause and register what's happening both in our minds and in our bodies at that time. Because I think as humans, our sense of what's right or wrong, what's wholesome or unwholesome to do, doesn't just come from our thought processes, but comes from our guts, from our feelings. And I think that we're well advised to take note of them in that situation.
Pausing. Pausing in service of the relationship and the conversation and the person that we're working with.
Yes. Yes.
I like that. I like pausing in service of our thinker.
Yes. And I think to cultivate a sort of permission for both the person and the coach to pause and have pauses throughout. Because I think often in our everyday conversations, in our common parlance, you know, and I'm certainly guilty of this myself, there isn't always sufficient pausing. There isn't always sufficient comfort with there being a silence. And I know that that's something that we've discussed before, but I think when we're faced with a tricky situation of what's the best thing to do, that's definitely worth a pause.
Yeah, I agree. Because otherwise, what I notice when I'm supervising coaches is that they get their insight in the room with me, and that serves them and their learning. But actually, what we want to do as we mature in coaching is to be able to get the insight in the room.
Yes.
So that in the moment, we know what's the right thing to do.
Yes.
Or the right enough thing.
Yes. And I think it's also worth, when there's been a pause, to capture what's happened in that and then to sort of try and understand it and maybe note it down. Because I think that can be very useful. And I think that when we feel stressed, which we do feel when we're facing an ethical dilemma, we need to be particularly attentive and restrained. And that is promoted by having a pause.
Yeah. Yeah. I sometimes say to people, I'm just asking myself a question.
Mm. Yes.
About how this serves you and your team and your organization or yes. whatever. So that, you know, it's that showing the working out principle, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's the thing about the co-created partnership that as long as my thinking is in service of our relationship and the work that we're doing together.
Yes.
And not working out whether person A is really married to person B or whatever the...
Yes, yes. And I really, that showing the working out thing is just so, is so important. I think it really makes for an authentic connection as well. It's kind of it's an honest thing, isn't it? It's saying, you know, if we are struggling with something, is it right? Well, this is tricky, isn't it? And we're in this together. Let's think about what needs to happen now. You know, so yeah, I think that's so important.
And if you go for the definition that I love, that coaching is two people talking about one person.
Right.
then that's that's a great thing.
Yes.
Because it's two human beings in dialogue.
Yes. And to keep in mind that phrase that you said, sort of being in service of the other person. And I think sometimes being in service of the other person involves being in service of the other person and their context. So, and the system that the other person is in. So, for example, in a mental health consultation, you have the person that you're seeing, but you need to have consideration for their family and the same, you know, in a parallel coaching situation, maybe that you're thinking about the organization that the person works for and that may actually be paying you. So I think that it is being in service of the person, being in service of their context as well.
Yeah.
And that in itself sometimes can raise a bit of an ethical issue.
Yes, and that's a huge thing, isn't it? Because traditionally we've said, you know, this conversation is entirely confidential. This is about you in this context. But as you say, there are other stakeholders in the thing. So I wonder if it's useful for us just to talk about confidentiality. So one of the things that many coaches say to the people they work with is everything that happens in this conversation is confidential, unless there's a risk of harm to self or harm to others.
Yes.
So my question to you is, as a psychiatrist, how do we know that?
How do we know whether they're at risk of harm to themselves or others?
Yeah.
Well, again, I would say that it's that high level of awareness, because that kind of assessment about harm involves both what the person says and what we see and what we feel. So I think that probably as a coach, if you're a coach without a mental health background, you probably have to have a fairly low threshold for, you need to know your limits and you need to have a fairly low threshold for thinking, are we in tricky territory here? And what do I need to do? Having said that, I think that it is appropriate to get a little bit of background around that, because some people say things that they may not necessarily sort of really mean in a sustained way, and triggering some sort of action or breaking of confidentiality could potentially, you know, be unnecessary and make things more difficult, you know, cause more suffering. So it is always a balance. And I would just go back to this really always trying to maintain a high level of awareness for what the coach themselves is capable of, what their experience and what their training is, and, you know, and their experience actually sort of generally in human life. I don't think it's a science. I think I'm repeating myself, but it's an in-tuneness.
In-tuneness.
Yes.
And you've given us a great question. Are we in tricky territory here and what do we need to do about it?
Yes. Yes. And I think some, my experience is that people who have harboured thoughts about harming themselves, it often can be a relief to talk about it. It doesn't necessarily mean that because they've verbalised it, it makes them more likely to act on it. I think sometimes it is talking about that is really about the extent to which they're experiencing distress and they really need to communicate that. But I would say, I obviously erring on the side of safety, it is important really for coaches to know their limits. And if they have that sense that it needs to be taken further, taken elsewhere, then that needs to be out in the open. Again, show the working out, you know, say, you know, this is really concerning to hear this. We need to think about what we're going to do with what you've, you know, what you're feeling, and try and find the best way forward.
Yeah. And I can think of two examples for me, one in which I rang occupational health because that internal alarm system was so very high and occupational health took over, and one where I put something in place to check in 24 hours later with the sponsor, where I said, do you know where you're going to find that? And they said, yes.
Yes.
And I said, is it okay in 24 hours if I just, and they were going to get it through the sponsor. And I said, is it okay if in 24 hours I just call the sponsor and check that they've heard from you?
Yes.
My lurking question is that both of those people had come through a third party referring them and had not self-referred. And I always wonder what I would have done had they self-referred and I had not known anyone else in their world.
Yes, yes. And just to, before we just follow on with that, Claire, just to understand a little bit about what was going on for you at the time that you were in those situations. What, you know, so for example, you described that you were in that situation on a Friday, you were going to check in with the person on the Monday. You know, did it affect you over the weekend? Did you
It didn't affect me, and also they talked about it as a recent past event,
right?
And they had done something about it and they knew they needed to do some more about it.
Yes.
So that one, my checking in, I'm looking at your question, are we in tricky territory here and what do we need to do? I think my sense was there was the potential of tricky territory being around. It had been there and it wasn't resolved enough for it not to be a risk that it came back in the immediate future. Right. But it wasn't so tricky that something instantly needed to be done.
Yes.
The other one was interestingly a relationship over a number of conversations where there had been no forward movement at all. So for me, one of my checking in thing has this person got the capacity to move forward, and are they demonstrating an ability to move forward, or are we constantly either standing still or going backwards over time? And that particular individual was that, and I can't remember what happened apart from the fact that it alarmed me sufficiently to believe that something needed to be done in the moment. And ironically, I just started working with a supervisor on my supervision. And they were the next person I spoke to. So guess what we spent the hour on?
Yes. And just having that hour fairly soon afterwards, did that make a difference?
It did. It made a huge difference because I needed to work out. Well, two things, I guess, as you asked me that, which I probably didn't know till you just asked me that question. One is, it wasn't too late to do something else. There was something else I needed to have done that I hadn't done.
Yes.
So that raises for me a question about accessibility to someone we can talk to in a timely way, actually.
Yes. Yes.
And the other one is, it is distressing to talk to somebody who doesn't seem to have the agency or the capacity to move and is talking about their desire to end their life.
Yes.
And a place to take that is really important.
Yes. And I completely agree and recognize that feeling about it's good to speak to somebody else in enough time that if you reflect on it and you think you need to do something different, that you've got enough time to do that. And I've been a consultant psychiatrist for 23 years. I still have that. I still feel often anxious, uncomfortable after I've had those conversations. So I think for coaches who are in receipt of some of this information, it's not going to feel comfortable, even if you discuss it with somebody, you know, because this is big, distressing stuff. And even when we know that, you know, we've done the right thing, we've done as best we can, we've sort of known our limits, we've made the appropriate referrals, there still is that lingering feeling of, should I have done something different? Have I done everything I can? And I think that even when we know logically we have, that's very often, in fact, practically always still there.
Yeah, because we're human beings.
Yes.
Talking to humans.
Yeah, and I definitely think that the option for talking these difficult situations over with somebody, a supervisor or, you know, and sometimes it doesn't involve breaking any confidentiality. But, and this is something I've noticed, this is an aside really, but as the mental health system has become more pressured, we do less co-work as professionals. And I really feel that when you're working on your own, you feel the weight of that information more heavily. But yes.
Yeah, interesting. So when we work with people who come to us for coaching who have self-referred and haven't got a sponsor or an organisational connection with us, mm-hmm. and we are feeling a high level of concern, what are our options?
Well, I would say in that situation, I would first of all ask the person, you know, to seek their agreement about whether we need to do something. It may be that even if you don't have their agreement, you feel that you need to do something, and that, you know, that ratchets it up. But if you feel that you really need to kind of hold that person's hand through the process, it may be a case of speaking with family member, speaking with asking the person to speak to their GP, even asking them to make a call while you're there. I mean, I haven't had this in a coaching context, so it's a little bit difficult perhaps for me to think about taking off my psychiatrist hat and putting on that. But I would say that it probably makes sense for coaches to be aware of their local, although actually coaches often work with people who are a long way away, don't they? And maybe over the phone. So that adds in extra, or Skype, that adds in extra issues. But I would say that, you know, GPs, mental health crisis teams, if, you know, that those are the kinds of services that I think, if you're really concerned somebody has a clear mental health problem, need to be trying to connect them with those people. But probably in the first instance, family and friends. But there's also that balance to strike about not being sucked into something inappropriately. So again, whilst I'm not telling you, Claire, a right or wrong way to respond in that, what I would say to any coach who finds themselves in that sort of situation is to take that pause and think about what needs to happen here. Because I honestly think that we tend in those worrying situations to react rather than to respond. We're too impulsive sometimes. So again, the pause.
And we're too quick, I think, to go into rescuer sometimes. I'm not talking necessarily about this specific example, but often I think we want to go into rescuer.
Yes.
And that removes somebody's agency, and it may be taking away the only bit of power they have left.
Yes. So I think being aware as well of our, and this is again comes back to personal awareness, what are our habitual patterns? Are we rescuers? Are we perpetrators? Are we victims? You know, what do we tend to do? And using those terms, just kind of referring to the Cartman drama triangle. Yes. You know, we we don't stick in any one role. We're in different roles in different relationships. But it's worthwhile, again, standing back, having a think, you know, what's really happening here? And again, that knowing where, knowing what's happening with your own emotions and how they're driving the situation.
Stand back, pause, notice what's happening in me.
Yes.
They're great questions, aren't they?
Yes. And they fit so many situations, not just this one.
Mm. Yeah. So it's interesting, Jenny. I'm always very happy to work with people who are having therapy, psychotherapy, and also want to come for coaching. And one of the reasons for that is I think it's really useful that if anything comes up that needs to be in the other space, you know that they have a pre-existing relationship with somebody and you can just name it and they can take it there.
Yes.
But I guess that, you know, inevitably, although most of the people we work with are going to come with a spread of a normal range, that sometimes as coaches, we will encounter somebody who's outside of that normal curve.
Yes.
So what would we be noticing there?
Well, we've talked a little bit already about sort of anxiety and depression, and certainly that's a spectrum, and it's at its severe end, anxiety and depression would be really disabling and really affect people's functioning. I guess another area would be if somebody is actually in the process or has already lost touch with reality. And has perhaps developed their own reality. They've perhaps become very suspicious to the point of being paranoid or even deluded about certain things. And, you know, I don't expect that this would happen very often in a coaching context, but I think it's worthwhile being aware when you're here, when you're in that coaching situation, you're working with somebody one-to-one, you're hearing their side of the story. Without the opportunity really to check it out with other people, that there might be times when you think, hang on a minute, does this really seem a little bit overly suspicious? And I have certainly been in situations where I have got a very long way into conversations with people, even several conversations with people, before I've actually realized that what they're talking about doesn't reflect external reality, and they have that, you know, they've lost touch with that. And again, I think that that's a difficult area, because often one of the key things about people who with a significant mental health difficulty have lost touch with reality, they don't acknowledge, you know, their reality for them is their reality, the external reality is neither here nor there. That's probably a rare instance. I'm thinking now, Claire is going to ask me what I would do in that situation. I guess that I would say I wouldn't get into sort of arguing the toss with people in that situation. I would just say that it would probably be an indication that coaching is not the right thing at this time. But again, each situation is individual and would require its own attention.
Yes, and I have a little filter in my head actually about data, because I notice that the data that people bring to coaching can be a variety of things. So one is self-reported data, what I say from my perspective, which is often what people do.
Yes.
One is anecdotal data, which is the story I'm hearing around here is, which I may believe to be true. One is the real observational data. You know, what did you see kind of questions. And then Brené Brown in her latest book, is that called Dare to Lead? She talks about the story I'm telling myself.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes.
So I like that, because I'm noticing that if you say to somebody, and so the story you're telling yourself is, and I've never had somebody who hasn't had the capacity to go, Oh, yes. That's the story I'm telling myself. And I just wonder whether knowing that there are those different kinds of data and asking a question from a different place might, for example, mean that somebody who actually was psychotic, or whatever your definition of that is, may not be able to engage in that question from a different perspective.
Yes, I think that that's very likely. I just want to sort of slightly go off on a tangent, Claire, and just talk about it very briefly, the stories we tell ourselves, because I just think that that is such an important thing in terms of mental well-being, mental health. The stories that we cultivate, the stories that we habitually repeat to ourselves throughout our lives, sometimes from childhood, and really how coaching offers an opportunity for those, some of those stories to be reviewed. I don't mean in a kind of deeply therapeutic way, but just people to sort of challenge the stories that they've always told themselves, because they can be very constricting sometimes.
Yes. And would you like to write a new story?
Yes. And or even, you know, what would the best story, you know, that there's that opportunity. But just going back to the issue of the sort of losing touch with reality to the extent that it's psychotic, I think, you know, that would be a rare thing. But I think that the questions that you clarified there would certainly be good indicators. People's responses to them would be really good indicators.
And I mean, personally, I found those questions really useful for me. So the story I'm telling myself is because it just helps it land it in a different place.
Yes, and it also helps, I think, sometimes just in a broader sense, understanding other people in group situations or team situations. You know, what's the story they're telling themselves there? You maybe get a different perspective on somebody who's been really bugging you if you kind of think, well, where are they coming from?
Yes, and the story that they're telling themselves, given what they can see.
Yes. So it occurs to me that this business that we're talking about of standing back, pausing, reflecting, it really, as well as giving you space, it also gives you so much of a better view. I know that's such an obvious thing to say, but it's just kind of just coming home to me more and more.
Yeah. So stand back, pause and reflect. And notice what's going on.
Yes.
But it's a great filter in every conversation, isn't it, to say, what am I noticing?
Yes. And sort of going into what we were saying earlier about the whole, you know, transference, counter-transference thing about sort of what am I noticing and how much of that noticing comes from what I was feeling to start with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Because as you say that, it's like you're kind of, because I know some people have a sort of beginning ritual when they, I don't personally, but many coaches have a beginning ritual.
Okay.
Which is, what do I need to do as I arrive in the room? But what you're saying there is that in your noticing, go, and how much of that did I bring in with me that I didn't realise?
Yes. And maybe checking in at the start of it and kind of thinking, right, what do I need to leave outside the room? You know, because we all have, and certainly that I'm really aware of that in day-to-day psychiatry, what I bring in really could potentially make a difference if I allowed it to.
Yeah,
I know it's an obvious thing to say, but sometimes the obvious, actually we don't act on the obvious.
No. We notice and then don't do something about it.
Yeah.
So, Jenny, thank you so much for everything you've shared with us. Is there anything as we finish that you feel is really important to say to coaches around this boundary with mental health?
Yeah. Well, you're really welcome, Claire. It's lovely to speak to you. I think what I would say is that, just reiterate, it's about awareness. It's about self-awareness, awareness of the person, and I think that's it. I think that's probably, at risk of repeating myself over and over, I think that that's what I would say. Thank you.
Notice your stuff.
Yes, notice your stuff.
Thank you so much, Jenny. Jenny Forge, who's an ACC and a psychiatrist. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and insights with us.
Oh, you're very welcome, Claire, and thank you. I need to make some notes because you've given me some really good pointers there as well. Thank you.
Pleasure.
We're delighted to offer this podcast training free of charge. If you would like an attendance certificate for any kind of accreditation, we're happy to supply that for a charge of £10, which just covers our admin. All you need to do is send a written reflection of what you're learning from this podcast against the competencies of your professional body, if that's the ICF or EMCC or something else. So a written reflection of what you're learning against your own ethics. And if you'd like to email that to info@3dcoaching.com, we'll send you a link for payment, and then happily our people here will issue you with an attendance certificate. So thanks for coming. Bye. You've been listening to The Coaching Inn. Find out more about us at www.3dcoaching.com/b-developed.